Let's jump on in now. So coming up here in a little bit, top of the next hour, State Representative Ernie Yarbrough calling in. I'll probably have one of the members of our congressional delegation on a little bit later in the week, but there's a lot of stuff happening, and I had to call this legislative review because we are in the throes of some major events going on in D.C., and we're also in the final days of the legislative session for 2025 down in Montgomery, and then Tennessee is much the same way. So, that being said, I just call this whole thing legislative review. You guys need to know what's happening because these are your representative officials. I mean, all of them technically are, even those in the executive branch, and but congressional legislative races, legislative officials, they are the ones who are there to represent you, per se, in the passage of laws and the balancing of budgets, or not. And some of the things that have been happening have been extremely interesting. And sometimes they're like more like inside the bubble, but you need to know about them. Like, here's one that really kind of got under my skin, but they apparently resolved it today. We're learning right now. This is now being put behind them. They're gonna get things moving. So Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna, Republican from Florida, really threw a wrench in the works last week unexpectedly. It was one of those things where you look at it and go, what? That's what we're doing? She got mad. Get this. She got mad because she wants proxy voting back on the table. How about this? We as Republicans railed against proxy voting when Pelosi allowed it during COVID because what it meant was people were basically phoning it in. This is representative government. You don't phone in representative government. Well, Ana Paulina Luna, who I generally speaking have agreed with on her stances, but she's got a notion that there needs to be a means by which young mothers who serve in Congress, who have babies, can proxy vote. And I look at it and go, no, I'm sorry. You know what? It's a job you ran for. You didn't just get hired. You actually ran for it. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who rely upon you to be there for them. In the event of a Senate, if it was in the Senate, it would be millions of people. But that being said, she threw a complete wrench in the work by trying to force delays in the voting, and they had to actually shut down the votes last week on key legislation. They have apparently reached an agreement. Story broke just right before the show. I mean, I'm sitting here holding a story in my hands from the Daily Signal that is yesterday's date, and today it's already changed. That's how fast things are moving. House Republicans, it says, have reached an agreement. The House was poised to vote this week on key legislation, but they had to reach an agreement to handle this demand for proxy voting. The Speaker of the House, Johnson, I agree with him. He says proxy voting, in his opinion, is unconstitutional and not on his watch. But he did look back and through the rules. They did some research, and they found that there's a rule, a procedure, that has been on the books since the 1800s, go figure, since the 1800s, that will allow for what they call live or dead pairing. Bottom line is what it means is if someone has to be absent and they can find that there's also an absentee on the voting side for the other side of the aisle, that they are allowed to nullify those votes and not count them against the majority. In other words, Ana Paulina Luna, if she was a breastfeeding mom, she would not impact the vote if there was a Democrat who could also be missing at the same time. Because typically they go by numbers. This would allow them to vote on numbers available. It's a difference. I look at it and think, you ran for the job. You're going to have to do the job. I'm sorry. And they're going to, and she and a small handful of others are going to say, well, it's discriminatory. No, it's really not because you knew it was there before you signed up. You just want to get in there and change the rules. And that's not what we're doing. I think putting America first is what the job calls for. In the meantime, the Speaker has very handily handled it. And we're moving past that, which is good because now we're watching actually important stuff happen. So something that happened over the weekend. I was in D.C. last week, and when we were meeting with some folks that I'll talk about more another time, when we were meeting with some folks, they said we have to stay close because the Senate may be voting, and we have to be able to run. Well, they did. but it took till Saturday, and it took to the early morning hours of Saturday. In a 51-48 vote, the Republican-led Senate approved a revised framework for the sweeping budget plans. Story here on NPR. Phil, did you go to NPR? I did. I go places so you guys don't have to. But I went to NPR. I did not feel necessarily like I had to have a shower after I was done reading the article. It actually was fairly factual. 51-48, in the early morning hours on Saturday, NPR reports the Senate GOP has now passed a budget plan setting up a critical next phase for the Trump agenda. What are we talking about? You may remember that the House passed their version of a reconciliation bill, the Big Beautiful Bill, Trump calls it. The Big Beautiful Bill that allows for border security, defense, a raising of the debt limit to some degree, and then also extending the Trump tax cuts and making them permanent. Well, there's been a real disparity in whether or not the House and the Senate would have a matching bill. They have to have matching legislation for them to use what's called reconciliation. If they can use reconciliation, they can only use it once or twice a year. I mean, it's procedural, but I'm glad we have formality. But this procedural effort towards reconciliation means we can get major things done without having to have 60 votes, which would entail having to have Democrats join us. You can have 51, and we have 51. So what just happened Saturday? Saturday, they passed a 51-48 resolution, which is the first step towards the final bill. What that means is they did achieve the framework. They got past the procedural hurdles. They can now bring it to the floor. And I think we're going to get it passed. If they can get this passed, and they got a little bit more work to do bringing the two bills together, House versus Senate. But if they can get this passed, we're going to see the Trump tax cuts made permanent. We're going to see effort and money put into national security on the border. We're going to see things like, you know, national defense being increased. The one issue that I have is it going to potentially lift the debt limit, and I don't like that at all. But I also recognize that what the Democrats are trying to do is force our backs up against a financial wall, and we can't be in that position. We're going to wind up bringing the budget back, and DOGE is really making things much better. But right now, what we're watching is potentially up to $521 billion added, not just in new spending, but in reallocated spending for the border and a variety of other policies. We're talking about billions of dollars in defense, and we're talking about a few wild cards left to be pointed out. Democrats are trying to tell you, by the way, don't fall for it. Democrats are trying to tell you, by the way, that this is designed to cut Medicaid. There is nothing in, the only people talking about Medicaid are Democrats in the mainstream media, just so you know. It's not in the bill. DOGE is actually cleaning up the Medicare and Medicaid rolls. Well, Medicaid's a state, but they're cleaning up where the money, how the money goes. But DOGE is cleaning up the rolls on all of this and finding that there have been people in Social Security and receiving benefits in Medicare, who never should have been, or who died many years ago and never stopped having their benefits sent to them. You're not looking at cuts to Medicaid and Medicare in this program. All I know is we got a lot going on right now, and we're way, 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 way too busy to deal with whether or not breastfeeding mothers in Congress are allowed to proxy vote. Time to put that crap aside and get back to business. And I appreciate Speaker of the House finding a way to use a former rule and negotiate back to a level-headed position that allows Congress to do its job. All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I'll switch gears to state because state's got some stuff going on, not the least of which is that we just had a major announcement about gambling legislation. Holy cow, the zombie bill. We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Wow, making common sense like a superpower. I'm in this number one of the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it the Legislative Review. Coming up here at top of the next hour, we'll have State Representative Ernie Yarbrough. He's always great for commentary. He's even guest hosted the show several times. Love that guy. So anyway, Ernie Yarbrough will be calling in here momentarily. But let me just tell you about a couple things that happened. If you've been around Alabama politics for a little while, and I know a bunch of my audience are Alabamians, if you've been around Alabama politics for a bit, you're going to recognize when I say that gambling is the zombie legislation. It rises every year from the dark, dank depths of its hole where it resides in between sessions, comes back in, consumes the air, feeds upon the dastardly, causes good legislation to be crushed under its weight.
I think it has a little cave that it hides under.
It does. A little dank, dark cave. Mm-hmm. Well, listen. Last year was a debacle year, watching them try to get something passed. I've been down there before when they tried to get something passed. All said and done, and if you're ever curious, I'll give you the straight skinny on how it all breaks out. I'll tell you what, I'll do some of that right now. The legislation for gambling is never truly about gambling. It's about greed. It's never truly about, well, the people just won a lottery. That's, you can set that aside. That's not even what it's about. You know why? Because the people that own the racetracks and the pseudo casinos here in the state of Alabama, they want a monopoly, and they want more than what they've got, and so they'll use you and even corrupt the system to try and get more in terms of sales written into the law. I had to go down there and speak against a bill a few years ago that was so awful. It's like, how do you call yourselves Republicans and still put a bill like this on the floor? That particular bill would have actually not just given an opportunity to grow to people who've been breaking our laws for years. It actually embedded their names. Like, it would have said Green Track and it would have said Victory Land into our state constitution. Why would we name any particular business in our state constitution? It doesn't work. It's called a monopoly. Anyway, the bottom line is what kills the gambling bill every year is the gambling interest, because they're never satisfied. They fight among themselves. And then they just basically crush their own legislation. It's also a bad idea. So there's that. I don't like it. I'm for it, you know, remaining elsewhere. What we have right now is plenty. And then what they've got in other states is so close that why would you worry? Is it really that hard to drive to Biloxi if you really need to gamble? So there's a lot of that. But here's the thing. It was raring its ugly head. Did I say raring its ugly head again this year? Just last week, State Senator Greg Allbritton, who's actually one of the budget chairmen, I know Greg well, served together with him. I like the guy. But Greg Allbritton, the Porch Creek Indians are his constituents, and he was floating another bill here with 10 or 11 days left in the legislative session. He was floating a bill that would have been a comprehensive gambling bill at the very last minute. And I thought, my gosh, you've got to be kidding me. You haven't even passed the budgets yet, and you're talking about doing this? Come on. Well, Thursday afternoon, the pro tem of the state Senate is now Senator Garland Gudger from Coleman. And Garland Gudger basically stood up on the issue. And I'll be honest with you, I appreciate it. He stood up and he said, with 12 meeting days remaining in the session, both budgets still awaiting approval, and other important bills and measures demanding focus and attention, the comprehensive gaming bill that was released today is simply too little, too late, has too few votes to pass, and I believe that it would require engaging in more long-term intense negotiations. Basically, what he says is, we ain't doing it. That caught me off guard. I did not know what you were doing.
Thank God.
But yeah, that's leadership. That's a clear indication he's not bowing to pressure, and I for one appreciate it. So what that basically means, and listen, every time the gambling bill comes up, they hire every lobbyist in Montgomery, and they start going at it, and they start shoving other bills aside. I've seen good legislation die on the vine every year because the zombie bill of gambling rears its ugly head and sucks all the oxygen out of the room, and you can't get anything else done. You'd like to think they could, but listen, this is a part-time legislature like most every state. They are only in session, generally speaking, 2 days a week. They only have 105 total legislative days each year, total. I'm sorry, 105 calendar days in which to do 35 legislative days. Thank you. So this would have been the end of the session if they'd done it. And Garland Gudger, Senator Gudger, if you're listening right now or any of your constituents are, good on you. Good on you. That was leadership, and I appreciate it. There's a lot more going on down yonder, one of which is I'm really bugged about the overtime tax extension. If the Republicans in Alabama let the overtime tax exemption that they passed a couple years ago die this year, then they have effectively just raised taxes on hourly workers. And let's not call it anything else. At that point, anybody who works overtime is currently tax exempt, would suddenly have taxes imposed. And that is wrong. There's no way in the world they can say anything else except, well, we just didn't mean to give them back that much money. That is so lame. This is hard. I mean, we got a multi-billion-dollar budget, but we're scared of giving away an extra $200 million. You know, it's hard. It's scary. We need the dollars. No, you don't. You're just rethinking it because the teachers' union told you to. All right, plenty more, including State Representative Ernie Yarbrough calling in. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, hour number two, coming up. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Meatloaf Monday, because it's always about the food. Hour number two on a Meatloaf Monday kicks off as we are currently in Dipper number one talking about the legislative review. I gave you some things that are happening in Congress because that legislative review was important. Big doings up there. But I always say, too, that what happens in your state capitals is absolutely as important. I don't care what state you live in. In our listening area, it could be Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, certainly. Your state capital sometimes has way more impact on your individual daily lives than what happens in D.C. That being said, let's talk about a few things that are happening out of Montgomery. I'm bringing on one of the members of our Right Side Ruffian family who's been on not on the show many times, but also co-hosted the show for us. And that is State Representative Ernie Yarbrough, hailing from up yonder in the northwestern part of our state. State Representative Yarbrough, how you doing?
Brother, I am doing better because I'm on your show. Man, it's good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you much. I appreciate that. Always good to hear from you. Hey, listen, I want to run through several things in our time together here, not the least of which is a bill of yours, 1819 reported on it today, the Alabama version of the Lake and Riley Act. It's House Bill 7, I think, and you're the sponsor. And it is planning to come to the floor this week, if I'm not mistaken. Tell me what you know.
Yes, sir. So, yes, it's HB 7. So the cool part of the story is, and this is the providence of God. So last session, I actually filed the bill because I saw that it had passed out of Georgia, right? Makes sense because that's where Stanley Lake and Riley lost their life, was in Georgia. So that's what got my interest hurt. So I started researching it and discovered this is a really good deal. So I didn't notice it till later in the session, last session. So I got it. I filed it. And in the providence of God, as I was filing it, I walk up there to hand the sweet lady in the chamber there the bill. And as I'm walking up, two other members come up, and they've got bills to file. And I said, hey, you guys are law enforcement. I bet you guys would love this bill. So I tell it to them. They, oh, yeah, we love that. They co-sponsor it. That was the chair and the vice chair of the committee to which it was assigned.
Wow.
So
yeah.
There's a God in heaven.
Yeah.
But what Lake and Riley Act does, similar to what Georgia does, okay, so... And then, of course, Trump got elected, which that was great. And then that was the first bill he signed. Couldn't believe it. God is good and mercy. So what the bill does is it allows state and local law enforcement to enter into an MOU with the federal government to help them enforce existing immigration laws, right? It creates no new laws or any of that. It just says, hey, whatever our existing immigration laws are, and by extension, however the government wants to work out enforcing those to prioritize the safety and the order and the security of our nation, what better way to do it than to let state and local law enforcement have an MOU with them, because they know the community. They know where the danger spots are, right? So it's like a grassroots, boots-on-the-ground kind of version of local law enforcement that loves and really cares for their community. There are some things along the way where, like, you know, hey, they can do some quarterly reporting to let people know. Their numbers will be along with their annual report to Aaliyah. But that's the heart of it. That's the nuts and bolts of it. You know, people can't be held, as is SOP. People can't be held for more than 48 hours. You know, and so there's no abuse or anything like that going on.
I think this is huge.
But it allows them to do it.
I think this is huge, and I think this is an absolute compliment to what the federal version of the Lake and Riley Act is. So it comes to the floor this week, you think?
Yes, sir. So we passed it through by the grace of God, we passed it through two committees this session, and I am told that it will be coming onto the floor on Thursday for debate and a vote. Last year we even took a Democrat amendment, which just said that we're not going to violate anybody's constitutional rights, which, I mean, I'll take that amendment twice for every bill, you know?
Yeah, that's one of those feel-good amendments that says that we'll actually do what the law says we have to do. I get it.
Yeah, and I'm all for that, right? And so we actually, the second committee that we passed it out of, there wasn't a single no vote. So I think there might have been a few abstentions from some of the Democrats. I think some of them actually voted for it. So that was encouraging, and I think this is going to be a critical piece. I've worked with chiefs of police and sheriffs, and they love it. So,
well, good deal. Well, listen, one thing that's not coming to the floor, apparently, is the overtime tax extension. So a couple years ago, you guys passed a bill that was actually sponsored by a Democrat, Anthony Daniels, who's been on my show. I thought it was an excellent bill. I loved it. And apparently, a lot of people loved it, and it basically exempted overtime pay from state taxation. And it's had a big impact. I mean, we're hearing good things out of how it's been received, except that it had a sunset provision on it, which, for, you know, people who don't know, that's the fancy way of saying it's going to expire at a certain date unless we extend it. Well, I'm hearing now that you were one of the sponsors of extending it, but the Speaker of the House has said that he does not want to bring it up for permanent extension. So what's the deal, man? Why would we do that? It technically is a tax raise on people who work overtime.
Yeah, sure. So obviously I co-sponsored the bill again this time. That's public. Everybody can see that. And I obviously sponsored it last time because in my district, I've got Nucor, I've got Daikin, 3M, I've got, you know, ULA, and on it goes. Heavy industry. I worked in that industry for over 10 years. So I know what overtime, you know, means to those people. And the reason why right now they're going to let it sunset, and I think the plan is to launch a commission to study, is the initial fiscal note was like $30 million. It's my understanding. And it ended up being like $250 to $300 million. So it cost them a lot more than what they were expecting. And I think they want to research into it to make sure that there's not loopholes or abuses of it being made or done through people who were salaried getting moved to hourly or something of that nature. But I co-sponsored it again because it means a lot to my district. And when we passed it the last time, I promised them that if there was an opportunity that came around, I mean, everybody in the House co-sponsored it last time.
Yeah.
But I promised, I know they didn't foresee 10 times on what they projected the cost to be, but I promised my district that if it came back around for a chance to make it permanent, I would support it because, you know, I mean, if you look at my campaign, no surprise, I'm not a big fan of, you know, taxes in general. And, you know, and so I, for me, it was me keeping my promise to my district because they use it a lot.
And I appreciate that because one of the things that I've heard Anthony Daniels himself told me is he's had companies tell me they were able to grow their company because they could incentivize more people to work overtime. And one company said they even got several new contracts that they never would have gotten had they not been able to field an overtime workforce. And he's concerned that they're going to lose some of that by dropping this legislation.
My hope is that we'll come back and revisit that because I think that could be a really attractive piece in the future to not only adding to the workforce, but also utilizing the workforce that we currently have. So
yeah.
I hope we can launch a study, figure out whatever the issues are, or the concerns that were, and bring that back because I think it's a very valuable piece to our economy.
Well, I agree, and I appreciate that. And I would bet that there are some people who are going to have to run a competitive primary next time around, and they're going to have people calling them out for not supporting an extension to this tax, basically creating a new tax increase by letting it expire. All right, let me ask you about something else, bud. So I just a little while ago talked about the zombie legislation of gambling that comes, you know, it rears its ugly head and creeps around and, you know, and chews things up every year. Well, the Senate pro tem, Garland Gudger from Cullman, just shut that down. He said, we're not doing that this year. Don't even start. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled. I'm an anti-gambling legislator. I think when you look at not only the morals and values and the crime and the trafficking and the problems that it brings, but if you actually dig into the financial impact of local taxes, local jobs, what it does to the poor, what it does to addiction and our mental health wellness and the problems that it's going to create there, it actually doesn't, to me, in my conviction, I think I could prove that it doesn't make even financial sense to do so. But I'm thrilled with that, number one, because at this point in the legislature, the session, I think Garland's exactly correct. It makes no sense to even have to deal with that now because there's not time. I mean, gambling, let's just be honest. I mean, it took up the entire last session, whether you're for or whether you're against it. And there were lots of good bills that got no movement or even discussion because that took up the whole session. So I think at this point, I really appreciate his reiterating that and stating that because now we feel like, you know, that's out of the way. And we could, let's just put, we got lots of good bills, some of which have struggled in committees and even got Susan DeBose's excellent bill, HB 342, about religious instruction, just got shot down by, I think, 8 Republicans voted against it and 4 voted for it in the committee. Because the Alabama Association of School Boards some of their people seem to be against religious, you know, freedom in our schools, but that's a separate topic, but one that I feel very passionate about. But let's let these other good bills move forward and not, you know, and get real progress on things that are about, you know, DEI or gender or Lake and Riley Act or medical freedom or whatever. You know, and not have to be held hostage by a piece of legislation that, quite frankly, is extremely divisive.
It's extremely divisive. It's constantly riddled with corruption and questions, and you're right. It sucks the oxygen out of the room and it kills good bills. I've seen wonderful pieces of legislation that should have passed fall by the wayside because we were way too busy, you know, having filibusters about whether we could pass gaming or not. All right, listen, I got about a minute and a half, and you mentioned a bill that I wanted to go back to. So Representative Susan DeBose, who's got a lot of conservative street cred herself, she's got a really solid piece of legislation you were just mentioning there a minute ago, and some Republicans voted it down, which I look at and go, my gosh, y'all, this is low-hanging fruit. And yet they let it fall by the wayside. Tell us about it real quick.
Yeah, HB 342, what it does in a nutshell, there's been Supreme Court cases that have been won on this that allows these third-party services to offer off-site, during school hours, religious instruction to young people. And so it's a great concept. We want to get the Bible back in schools. We kicked it out because of money, because we, the state, accepted bribes to kick out school by taking federal money instead of saying, you know, no, we'll just, you know, we're going to keep the Bible in schools. And so the, apparently from what I understand, the school board association, a couple of the governmental affairs people came over and, you know, it's just scare tactics. Well, no, this is going to open the door for Satanism to come in and teach or whatever. Which is not only nonsense in comparison to me, in my humble opinion, to the religious makeup of our state, but it also, there's something much more fundamental that it misses. Our schools are already inherently religious. The idea that you can have classrooms, public school or not, but they're already teaching theory of origins, evolution. They already have a voice on morals and values. That's why we're having this big debate on the homosexual and the DEI and the transgender. That's in our schools right now.
Yeah.
And what you're going to be in the future. We need to back up and understand that the idea that you can have an a-religious or religiously neutral or religiously empty education in schools is an utter myth, and it's a lie. Having religious overtones to education about where I come from, who I am, and where I'm going, brother, they got that in Marxist and communist schools in Russia. It's all part of education, and we need to just honestly, the Christians need to get courage to speak up. We're a Christian nation. We always have been. And you're not going to not teach kids about origins, right and wrong, and where they're going. So we need to be courageously bold, in my humble opinion, and say, you know what? The idea of religious neutrality in education is a myth. We're going to stand boldly for what we know is right, and we're going to lean into that. Susan's bill may have died one day, coming from the Senate as well, with I believe Senator Shelnut, and we're going to win this battle because we are having more and more honest media and radio shows like yourself calling it out.
Well, wow, brother, we just ran the gamut, but I got to leave it right there. State Representative Ernie Yarbrough, as always, man, you're a wealth of knowledge. We appreciate the stances you take, and we'll have you back on again sometime soon.
Love it. Thank you, brother.
See you, man. Ran long on purpose. I want to squeeze some of that in, but let's take the break right now. Listen, when we get back from the break, we'll kind of wrap this up. Believe it or not, there's things happening in Tennessee, too. Got to tell you about those. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades. Hey, I got a real short segment here because I ran long with Representative Yarbrough, but I want to go to the phones because Matt from Madison is on the line. Matt, how you doing?
All right, how you doing, Phil?
I'm good. What can I do for you?
I got a couple things, but just real quick because it's a short segment. First of all, I think you and the rest of the talk show folks, which curse for the radio, should hold these politicians' feet to the fire. They come on, they say, oh, well, the tax on overtime really cost us. How did my work in overtime cost them money? First of all, it's a bigger question. I understand that. But it's all Woodrow Wilson's fault anyway, because there's no such thing as an income tax. It was never ratified by 2/3 of the state. He was lied to. And it's just a mess. If people understood what they pay in taxes, they'd go crazy. But they pay little at a time, and they have no idea. But it makes me sick in my stomach to hear these people. Well, that really costs us more money. How'd it cost you money? That's my money. Anyway, that's all I got, Phil. Thanks for bringing it to
life. All right. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you, man. Yeah, you know, here's the thing. These overtime hours, some of which would have occurred, but a lot of which wouldn't occur at all. You've got there's more revenue gained for the state than just the income tax of the employees who work. Because when the workforce has to be at work, the power has to be on, which means the utilities are getting paid in greater detail. When the workforce is at work overtime, it means that there's going to be everything from vendors with food trucks outside feeding them to people that are supplying them things that they can spend their good hard-earned money on when they leave work. You're going to have people that buy more. You're going to have people that sell more. You're going to have people that do more. You're going to have any number of things. And so, yes, while the cost to the state could be figured as, well, if we had been taxing those overtime hours, we would have gained $300 million, but we didn't gain it because we gave it away. Well, then you have to also say, all right, how many of those overtime hours would not have even been there but for the fact that people realized they were getting a tax break by working extra? Because some people look at it and go, it's not worth it, man. I don't need to go to work just to feed the state. And you're going to find out that there's more people there, less inclined to work overtime, because now overtime is going to result in less money in their pocket than it would have before. And they're going to decide whether they want to get a side gig instead. It's just a different, or no gig. It's short-sighted, in my opinion. And it also, by the way, goes against what Republicans stand for. You just put a tax break in place, and now you're letting it fall apart. For what reason? Well, we may have given away too much money. You mean you may have given away too much productivity? That's the way you need to look at it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. Goes like from Huntsville back over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden. I mean all the way down to that loveliest little town on the plains called Auburn, stretching across the border into Fort Benning. We now call it again Fort Benning, Georgia. And then, oh, by the way, huge patches of North Georgia and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Got to do a shout out. By the way, I said it earlier in the show, but they may be on the drive home now, and I can say it and make sure they hear it. Thank you to Colonel Polkmeyer and to Sergeant First Cast Trailer, who had me out to speak to the JRTC ball on Saturday night. Had a great time, and I'll tell you, You look at it and go, how many of these kids are going to go in the military? It doesn't matter. Some of them will. I already know because some of them already enlisted, and they told me they were really proud of it. But what I did see that night, though, more than anything, was I saw kids who were being taught tradition and honor and patriotism and disciplines, and they salute the flag and they're proud of what they do and their uniform. And I just listen. I loved it, and I had a great time. Charlene and I were both there for their dinner and their ball, and I was a speaker. And so anyway, thank you again. Shout out to you. Y'all are definitely OG ruffians, and we appreciate you very much. So I got a piece here from Tennessee, Phil. They've got a bill right now. Very interesting. Not sure where it's going to go. I pulled this off the Tennessee Lookout, not necessarily a bastion of conservative news reporting, but you've got a bill right now being floated by a Tennessee Republican in their legislative session that would basically exclude some immigrant children from public schools. Huh. And here's the byline. The Tennessee Republican Senator Beau Watson has refused to rule out the possibility his bill could force educators to report students to immigration authorities. Stop it. Give me a break. Like what all you're doing is turning teachers into, you know, ICE agents. Shut up. No, we're not. The end result of this is, what they're saying in the bill, is that it would require immigration status checks during enrollment. And that kids who are not showing the proper immigration status check would be denied legal status to attend school. Now, it's rough. I get it. It's one of those things where you look at it and go, it's not the kids' fault, per se, that they're here. And wouldn't you love for them to have something meaningful, you know, gained while we work out the immigration status? In the meantime, though, I don't know where this bill is going to go. But they did vote on it 7-4 to approve it to come out of committee, and we'll see where it goes. But that's happening. That was Dateline Friday on the Tennessee Lookout. I had another bill. Hang on a second. Tennessee. Here it is. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee, signing a bill restricting the use of cell phones in Tennessee schools. So pulled this off of WSMV out of Nashville. A bill restricting cell phones in Tennessee schools was signed into law by Governor Bill Lee late last week. The measure requires school boards and governing bodies of public charter schools to create policies that prevent students from using cell phones, tablets, smartwatches, or other wireless communication devices. I thought about smartwatches. What a way to cheat on a test, man.
Oh, yeah.
You sound like you know what you're talking about.
No, I don't. Actually, I've never owned an Apple Watch before.
Okay.
But I know other kids who, yes.
Yes. I mean, literally, just like tap your phone. What's the answer to number 2?
Yep.
Next thing you know, it comes in.
And then when they write these bills of no phones in schools, it's like, oh, no, you never said watches in schools. So, yeah, they need to specify smartwatches as well.
Wow. So what's happened with Alabama's bill? Do you know? Have we passed that one yet, or is it still floating through? Do you know?
From what I looked up, I think it's still floating through. I think I saw that when I was looking up for home fries last week. It's still floating through. But Kay Ivey has expressed that she will sign it immediately. So,
well, she put it in her State of the State address.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We'll see. Either way, Tennessee did it. Tennessee passed it. It's gone to the governor for signature. So it's a done deal. It's real. It's going to happen. There's also a bill going through Montgomery as I wrap this segment up. There's a bill going through the Montgomery process. This House Bill 246 called the Freedom to Speak Act. What is that? Well, it's our House Majority Leader, Scott Stothagen, from this listening area out of Hartsel, a Republican. It says here, Dateline last Thursday, transgender activists flooded the House Education Committee on Wednesday to speak at a public hearing on the bill, House Bill 246. It's a second bill related to gender ideology and transgenderism at that meeting. Brought nearly a dozen advocates to speak out against it. Basically, this bill would prohibit employees of public schools from using the names and pronouns that are inconsistent with the biological, you know, birth sex of a child. What they're basically saying is, listen, you activist teachers, the ones who forget that you're really there to educate kids, you're not going to go to school and call little Johnny she. It's not going to happen. You're not going to go to school and start calling little Susie Jim. It's not going to happen. So We'll see where it goes, but right now that bill's just getting started and it's late in the session, so I just wonder if it's going to happen. But it's got some great support. Alliance Defending Freedom, Eagle Forum of Alabama, Foundation for Moral Law, and others were among the bill's supporters. It just basically, in fact, one person said, who is this that said it? Ted Halley. I think he's just a citizen who came and spoke at the public hearing. You can do that, by the way. Let me make a quick aside. You watch. If you see a bill you like or don't like, understand this. Anybody can ask for a public hearing and go down to Montgomery and speak to the committee. Anybody. You don't have to just wait and see what the lobbyists find out. In fact, what really makes a difference more than anything is when good, average, solid, well-read Joes and Janes walk in off the street and speak. And they say, here's how that bill will affect my life. But yeah, one citizen came down there and said, this bill just codifies respect, and it goes both ways. He said, I don't have to agree with you to be able to respect you, but you can't force me to have to say your pronouns. So there's that. Last thing you might want to know, and I'm supportive of this, by the way. Generally speaking, I'm supportive of this. Blue Cross is a monopoly here in the state of Alabama. It just is. And I'm not saying Blue Cross is evil. I'm just saying Blue Cross is the giant. It is the big dog. But we're a capitalist society. We are a free market. And one of the free market things that so often can't happen is what's happening in health insurance in Alabama right now is that Alpha, which is a big dog, but Alpha has always been in homeowners and business insurance, never been in health insurance. Alpha has got a health care plan on tap for its members. And by the way, I'm an Alpha member. I'm not a farmer, but I can join as a member of Alpha. And I will tell you this, Alpha in Montgomery is one of the most conservative organizations in the capital. When they represent an interest, they generally speaking align with right side ruffians mentalities. And there's a new healthcare right plan right now that Alpha is floating, and Blue Cross does not like it. Not at all. Because what they want to do is they want to kick off the ability to provide for their members a first-class health insurance plan that would not require them to have to buy Blue Cross if they don't want to. Well, Blue Cross isn't going to stand for that. And I can tell you right now, they're not. And by the way, I get it. Blue Cross is going to wind up having its own reasons for defending its interests. But in the end, you have to look at it and go, okay, Republicans, there's a conservative principle called the free market. How do you feel about that? And are you really going to let one shut down the other simply because they don't want competition? That's not the free market. So I just, listen, keep your eyes on that, because this will be a major icebreaker. Do we have other insurance in Alabama? Certainly. We have, United Healthcare. We have TRICARE. We've got some smaller plans. But Blue Cross is the dominant giant. And Blue Cross is the one that sets the prices, sets the standards, and if Blue Cross doesn't like it, it's probably not going to happen. And if you're a medical provider like a doctor or a dentist and you don't like the way Blue Cross is doing your reimbursements, tough luck. Otherwise, you're going to shut your practice down. So, interesting dynamic here that Alpha has bowed up and said, real important to us, we want to get this done. We want a new plan for our members. We're willing to foot the bill to get this thing going. We just want the opportunity to do it. And it takes legislation to do it. That's what's crazy. It takes legislation to do this. Why? It just occurred to me. I hadn't even thought about this. Why does it take legislation to build the better mousetrap? That's a weird dynamic. That's a clear indication that we are perhaps overregulated, maybe. Perhaps we have got legislation that's more in the way sometimes than others. And Blue Cross is already saying it's going to create chaos. It's going to destroy people's premiums. It's going to drive people to use Obamacare. No, it's not. No, it's not. That's the shock and awe kind of tactics. We'll see where it goes. I'm not sure it's got legs to pass this year or not. With 11 days left, it's a big, big, big lift. But I bet you it's not going away. You watch for it to come back in a later session if it doesn't pass this time. That's big doings. All right, I got a ton of text messages, and before we go to the break, I'll just tell you this. So Podcast Land is full. The latest edition of Out of Right Field Sports Talk with JP came out today. Am I right?
Yes, it did.
What's the key topic?
Talking about the USA fencing story.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So this story went even deeper than I thought until I started doing research for it. Apparently, the chair of the fencing organization was airing out emails of parents complaining about transgender men playing in sports and posting them on social media, like, look at this Karen.
Like oh, really? Yeah. Like doxing people for daring to say something?
He blocked out everything but their name, but he was posting it on social media being like, you know, look at these parents. They're being ridiculous. And so, yeah, the story goes pretty deep with this guy, the chair of USA Fencing. Is pretty nuts. It's gross. Wow.
Now, is USA Fencing, is it collegiate or is it like a almost like professional sport?
No, so like, I'm pretty sure it goes from college all the way down to like kids playing. Okay. It's like a, you know, or so that's what the emails were saying, like, we saw you guys are okay with transgender men playing in sports and we have daughters in your organization and we're pulling them out because we don't like that. And his response back is calling them a coward, saying, you know, you're teaching your kids how to be disrespectful, calling them a Karen. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Well, how do we get him removed?
I hope a movement starts to get this guy removed. That's pretty bad. Hopefully Trump is aware of if they do get any federal funding, you know, get rid of it, you know.
Well, so that's what's cool is we have multiple video podcasts that come out every single week. I got mine coming out on Wednesday. I'll be finishing it up tonight. But JP's is out of right field. And you can imagine it's going to wind up being sports with a conservative commentary added to it very often. And it sounds like he got it nailed for this one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good deal. It came out today, right?
Yes.
So check that one out of right field. I guess last night we also had the posting of Emily Jones's most recent controversial mom.
Yep.
That was on our newsletter, which, by the way, brings me to one more point. All this stuff, there's reminders, there's input, there's info, there's links to our merchandise store. There's all these things that go out in our daily newsletter called the Right Side Report. If you're not getting the Right Side Report, man, y'all are missing out. It's free. It doesn't spam you. It just comes to your inbox, but you have to sign up for it. So there's a couple of ways to do that. The easiest way is this text line that we use every day, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Just text the word newsletter. It's one word, nothing else, just newsletter. You'll get an automatic reply back that says, here's how you sign up, and it'll just drop in your inbox every day. Butters puts that together for us every day and does a great job. All right, man, take us to the break. We'll come right back. We're going to switch gears. I'm going to call an audible. I'm going to dipper number 3, America's Tough Love. Trump's tariffs. What are we seeing? What are we feeling? I got plenty. Y'all stay tuned. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. I got a ton of text messages, which I'm going to get caught up on here in just a minute. And before I do, I just got to remind you guys of something. So we've got a ton of stuff in our merch store, and we just got a new batch of shirts. I don't think Butters has them up on the website yet, does he?
No, not yet.
All right. So brand spanking new shirts just came in. They have the history of the American flag on the back and the Right Side Media logo on the front. So check out our merchandise store. It's at rightsidemedia.org. Check out the merch store. We got coffee mugs. We got hats. We got T-shirts. We'll have the brand new T-shirt up sometime this week so you can see it. Order now. Natalie will get them out to you ASAP. And I can tell you right now, supplies are going to be limited on those T-shirts. So jump on them while you can. We also got replenished on our other Right Side Ruffian shirts. So yeah, jump on in there, y'all. We got plenty. And by the way, one of the favorite things, which we're going to have to order more of pretty soon, is the Right Side Media Bulletproof Influence Highball Glasses. Picture a glass, an actual like drinking glass. The Right Side Media Bulletproof Influence logo engraved in the glass, and then there's a 308 bullet round embedded in the glass next to it that did not go through, so therefore it is bulletproof. Bulletproof Influence. So yeah, check it out. In fact, if nothing else, go look at it right now just because it's so crazy cool. You got to see it to believe it. I don't know how they do this, but we work together with a company called Benshot, and they make those for us. Custom made for ruffians. All right, so I got a bunch of text messages. I'll get a few now and probably some after the break. Some of these date back to earlier in the show, so let me scroll down here a little bit. TL from Huntsville says, Phil, I wish every member of the Alabama legislature would listen to the 1965 commentary by Paul Harvey entitled If I Were the Devil. Oh, I've heard that one. in which he included gambling as one of the evils of a degrading society, saying that he would, quote, get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks to you. Ron from Tuscumbia says the zombie bill, that's gambling again, the zombie bill explains why Representative Keel said in a text over the weekend that they probably won't have time to bring up the overtime bill. No, the gambling bill got shut down. It's gone. So that's not the excuse. The overtime bill has time. It's a question of want. You got the can do and the want to, right? So they can do it, but they don't want to do it. And that's the problem that leadership's got right now with this bill, is they don't want to. It's a mess. Thomas from Athens says, I just don't trust almost any Dems. Okay. I see. I was in relation to an earlier text there. We were talking about the, I see. Yeah, he was. Okay, let me back up. Now there's context. Context is everything. So Thomas is the one who was texting me earlier saying that with regards to Representative Anna Paulina Luna holding out and saying that she wants to have, you know, breastfeeding mothers in Congress be allowed to miss and have proxy votes. Bad idea. That they've come up with an old rule from the 1800s they're going to put back in place that says that if someone on the other side of the aisle is sitting out, that you can sit out also, and it will at the very least cancel out the need for those votes, and it won't count against the majority. And then Thomas made the point, what happens if the Democrat at the last minute changes their mind? And my point was, I don't think they can. That was a whole lot of talking about one text. I feel like I had a mini dipper just there. Just getting there. Let's see what we got. Colin from Decatur says, you would think the legislature would realize that if overtime is exempt, yes, they're losing a little bit of money at first, but that leaves everyone in Alabama with more of their own money, which they in turn more likely will spend on stuff they want, continuing to stimulate Alabama's economy. Colin, you are indeed an economist, and the majority of our legislature is not. You nailed it, man. That's exactly right.
But we're supposed to have like a conservative Republican. Well, let me say Republican supermajority doesn't always mean a conservative supermajority.
That's exactly right. There's a vast difference between being a conservative and being a Republican. Devin from Brownsboro said, when does the no tax on overtime expire? June, I believe.
June 30th. Yeah.
Yeah. June 30th. It's going away. It's going away soon.
But obviously, session ends May 15th, so you don't have till June 30th. You have till May 15th.
Yeah, May 15th to extend it. Exactly right. And you know what? Here's the other thing. Have you seen the governor calling for it?
No. Nope. She's too busy signing Glock switch bands. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, hour number 3, Meatloaf Monday, coming up.